As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, Billy, why don't we tell them what we're about, man?
So we're here to welcome you to the Madhouse Chronicles. It's a talk show with myself, Billy Morrison.
And me, Ozzy Osbourne.
This man, Prince of Darkness, and we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Come and join Ozzy and myself. Visit osbournemediahouse.com to get special access to...
Come on!
What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
You are listening to The Overwhelmed Brain. Today's episode is brought to you by RX Bar. For 25% off your first order, visit rxbar.com/brain. Make sure to use the promo code BRAIN during checkout. Are you annoyed by affirmations? Are you tired of that same old rehashed personal growth advice that all seems to boil down to, think positively and all your problems will go away? If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then I want you to get ready. The Overwhelmed Brain is here to help you create the life you want now. Welcome to The Overwhelmed Brain. I am your host, personal empowerment coach, Paul Coliani. I am here to help you increase your emotional intelligence, strengthen your self-worth and self-esteem, and empower you so that you can make decisions that are right for you. Everything I talk about on this show is my personal opinion and is meant for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult a medical or psychological professional before making any changes that could affect your physical or mental health. All right, thanks for tuning in. If this is your first time listening to the show, welcome. It's mainly an email content-driven show where I receive your emails and read them on the air. And just to let you know, if you send me an email with a question or a story, it may take a while to get on the air. So keep that in mind if you're going to send an email that needs a timely reply. I will not be able to do a timely reply unless you're in the patron program. If you're in the e-coaching program where I respond to you within 1 to 5 days, that's a different story. That's at patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. I don't put those on the air. I answer those directly. But for anything that goes on the air, for someone just reaching out saying, hey, I have this issue, I have this challenge, I have this person in my life that I don't know how to talk to or communicate with, or I do, and they're being a jerk or something. Those are the kind of emails that might sit for sometimes 2, sometimes 3 months, not because I'm ignoring them, but because there is an order that they come in and I get a lot, but I address them all. I just want to let you know that, just in case you sent your email in and said, this guy isn't reading my emails or acknowledging that he even received the emails, because I get a lot of them. And but I do see each and every single email that comes to me, so I appreciate you sending them to me. And of course, if you don't know where to send them, just send them to paul@theoverwhelmedbrain.com. And again, if you want more timely responses and you need help, you know, more immediate, you can also do coaching with me, and you can also do the e-coaching program, which is patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. Anyway, let's get to the first message. Let's see where this takes us today. See if I can help this person out. Someone named Joe, I'm going to give him that name, Joe, wrote to me and said the following. Paul, your podcasts have made a world of difference for me since I came across them. In my early 20s, I met a girl my same age. We fell deeply in love. I was a beach bum from a divorced family with no real direction, but she loved it. It was genuine. Life happened quickly for us. She was finishing her master's degree and constantly interning for her career. At the time of meeting her, I was convicted of a felony. It was a stupid mistake. With no family money, no support, and a subpar lawyer who actually forgave my bill because he knew I couldn't pay, my world turned upside down. I couldn't find a job in a position of integrity. I was constantly sending resumes, having interviews, and always getting shot down because of background checks. It was like the world had its thumb pressing down on me. It was painful, and I felt small. But for years, my girlfriend stayed with me. It didn't matter to her that I had all this baggage, just as long as I was good to her and our relationship. She loved my perseverance and my will to stay on top, working two lower-paying jobs a day for years. However, I began sabotaging the relationship with my girlfriend. I didn't know what I was doing. Here I am in this wonderful relationship, and yet my self-worth was so low that I was waiting for something to go wrong, for her to break up with me. Meanwhile, she has already decided to be with me. I had already won, but I was blind. For years, this continued. I could not just let things be in regards to our relationship, which was the only positive thing in my life. Honestly, she was a gift. Now I'm confused. 4 years into our relationship, throughout all the stress that I introduced, I moved 900 miles away because of a job opportunity. I had gotten word that an old family friend started a business years prior. It was perfect for my skill set. I needed it, and I definitely deserved it, and I didn't have to go through a background check. Even though we were now long distance, our relationship continued under the pretense that I would eventually move home. I had been away for 4 years, yet still in a relationship. What a wonderful and faithful woman. We would have visits, we'd talk, we'd stress together. But then it became overbearing for both of us. We missed each other. She and her family are in a higher social class than I am, and she became concerned about what people might think. She became embarrassed. I don't blame her. Her purpose was to be a mother and a wife. It's obvious that I wasn't helping that purpose by being 900 miles away, but there was no worthy job for me where she lived. For years, I'd send resumes and fly or drive up to our state for interviews, still getting turned away, feeling like less of a man because of that felony. And to make it worse, I was losing my girlfriend. Our plan was to be wed, but now we're broken up. She is done and has had her fill of it. I never did move back home. I feel I couldn't settle for one or two crappy jobs. That would be going back in time. Nor did I want rejection stress again. I'm wanted here, work-wise. But all that feeling at the cost of losing the love of my life? I don't understand. I actively wanted her, but didn't seek her. I don't know my purpose in life or why I do the things that I do. I'm scared for myself beyond belief, and now I'm alone as could be. My friends are back home. I prematurely took myself away from home to survive. I'm regretting it now. Thanks for taking the time to read this email. Thanks so much, Joe. Thanks for sharing that. One of the things I want to mention that Joe is really highlighting here is that one stupid mistake can cost a lot. And this is really smart to think about. I mean, think about the things you've done in your life that you just look back and go, wow, that was a stupid mistake. And did your life change because of it? And the only reason I want you to do that is because if you have in mind a stupid mistake that you're about to do, you might want to do that same thinking as if you were in the future looking back at that. There are decisions that you might be considering making that you might think, well, I could, I don't know, get away with it, or I'll do it and nobody will find out. Just consider how life-changing it could be when someone finds out. And you might think, well, no one will ever find out, or I'll make sure they don't. But if you think along those terms, that's when you get into trouble. I mean, this is common sense advice, I know. But think about the idea of doing something that you believe you can get away with, but change the forethought of, I'm going to do something and get caught. Just change your thinking to that type of image so that when it comes time to make the decision to do something that might be a stupid mistake, you realize, oh, I am going to get caught. And then go through that process. And if you need to be reminded what it's like to get caught, I watched some of those old To Catch a Predator episodes. If you don't know what that is, go on YouTube and type in To Catch a Predator. And you'll see people getting caught. And you can tell that they feel like their life is over. It's a good reminder. I'm not saying that you should go through life paranoid. I'm just saying that if you do have something in mind that you think you're going to get away with, or maybe you shouldn't do, it's good to have that little motivation so that you don't go through with something maybe you shouldn't do. So that's what I wanted to say first with Joe's email. Now let's get to maybe some of his issues here. Joe, I'm going to say that all of us make decisions that we prioritize in our life. We might have a wonderful relationship or one that could actually evolve into a wonderful relationship, but we feel like we need to get our career on track first. And so we have to make the important life-altering decision on what to focus on. Now, some people might say, oh, we can focus on our relationship and our career at the same time. And absolutely, I agree with that. But sometimes we have these mistakes on our record, and we don't necessarily have all the same opportunities everyone else has. Well, not everyone else, but a lot of people have. And when we have a limited set of opportunities, we have to make more important choices, more restricted choices. When our choices are that restricted, we have to make decisions that sometimes we don't like. And that's what you did, Joe. You decided that you needed to work on your foundation. And let me tell you this, I support this. I support that when you don't have a solid foundation and you can't feel good in yourself, that the focus needs to go into that foundation. I'm always a proponent of bringing the best version of you into any relationship. So if you think that you made a mistake, I mean, that's possible. I don't know your entire life here, but if you think you made a mistake because you lost this woman in your life, please remember that you decided to work on yourself to bring the best version of you into her life or anyone's life in the future. So I don't look at it as a mistake. I look at it as I had a choice to make, and it was either to be with this person and have to work some low-paying jobs, not really feeling like I'm getting ahead, and having her at this, like you said, upper social class or economic class, having her look at you or her family look at you and you feel inferior or whatever feelings you were having, and taking that feeling with you throughout life. So when I look at your decision, I go, good for you. Because that must have been so hard. You realized you made a mistake. Now it's on your permanent record, unless it falls off at some point. I don't know, but it's on there for a while. And now you have to do something for yourself. So what you decided to do is establish a solid foundation for yourself. So I think that was smart. It hurt. It was like a hard decision to make. But, you know, I look at this as values. What do you value most? You may look at a relationship and go, I value this relationship so much, I would do anything for it. Yet, who are you bringing into the relationship? So I see this as you looking at yourself going, I'm not done yet. I don't feel, I don't know, good enough yet. I don't feel worthy enough yet. Whatever it is for you. And you made the hard decision that a lot of us, including myself, have chosen not to make. I had a really good established career. I had a condo that I nearly owned in Florida. And then when I met the woman that I would eventually marry, I decided to follow her, give up my career. I eventually went bankrupt with my condo. I don't blame her. These are all my decisions, but this is what happened. I made the choice to give up things that maybe I shouldn't have done. You know, that doesn't mean I didn't want the relationship. It just means, you know, a part of my foundation crumbled because I followed my heart. I'm not one of those people that say, follow your heart. Sometimes it works, but I really believe you have to strengthen and build up that foundation, you, so that you can bring the best version of yourself to any relationship. You can bring the best version of yourself that you're proud of into the world. So I'm proud of you in this respect, because that was a hard decision. I know it was. So it wasn't like, why did I do that? Why did I let this woman slip through my fingers? I wouldn't look at it like that. I would look at it in the sense of, look what I did. Look at the sacrifice I made to build this foundation in me so that it was more solid, so that no matter what happens in life, if I fall, I have the solid foundation to fall on. Because imagine you're with her and then you have trouble and now, you know, she dumps you or you break up for some reason. Where do you go back? You go back to what? Yourself, of course, but how do you feel about that self? Have you built up and done the personal growth in yourself so that you feel proud to be you? Some people don't feel that way. Some people have a history that didn't work out the way they wanted to work out. Some people are in this space right now. But you made that hard decision. Sometimes it's a very hard decision. But that doesn't mean that life is over now. It doesn't mean that she was the only woman out of billions that are on the earth that you'll ever have. Or maybe you will again. But what it does mean is that when you feel good in you because you're reestablishing or rebuilding yourself, that you can bring this happier, better version into the world, not because the world would be more attracted to that version of you, but because you feel better in yourself. And when you feel better in yourself, you don't look to the world to fill any void in your life. I mean, it happens. We all look for things that help fulfill us in ways. But the more you can do in you, the more you can build up in yourself, the more you can grow within, the less dependency you have in the world at large. It sounds a little strange, but the less you depend on someone else, the more independent you become. And quite frankly, my opinion, the happier you can be. Not because you're independent, but because you don't have a reliance on someone else to make you happy. Yes, people come into your life and they fulfill you and you do become happier because you're sharing your life, you're sharing your experiences, but you don't have such a dependency on them that when they're not in your life, you're completely unhappy. Because that's what I like to avoid. I like to help you avoid being unhappy, being stressed. So how do you do that? You work on yourself so that you're happy within. So when you're out in the world and you're with other people, they're not the ones that you're dependent on to bring that happiness to you. So I hope that makes sense. That's the first thing I want to tell you. The next thing is where your focus is right now, because what you're telling me is that you have regrets. And, you know, when we focus on regrets, it's looking in the rearview mirror. We're always looking behind us, seeing what we did instead of something you're already doing, which is seeing what we're going to do, which is rebuilding your life, which is building your foundation so that you have something solid from which to take off. When you have something solid, like a launch pad for a rocket, that is solid ground. So when the thrusters kick in, it actually has something to push off of. This is what I want you to remember, is that what you're doing is you're building the solid ground so you have something to push off of, so that you get forward momentum, so that you can launch and do whatever you need to do in your life. But again, it starts where you are today going forward. If you continue focus on what I lost and what I regret, it's always going to be a detriment to you. It's always going to slow you down, because you're going to have a great day one day and then you'll, I mean, it's going to happen. You're going to think back, oh, what I lost. Happens to all of us. But don't let that be the majority of the time. Let those thoughts come in. That's fine. But then get right back to work. Get right back onto that forward momentum. You know, look at what you're doing for your life in the future and go, you know what? One more year I'll have savings, and one more year I'll have this, and one more year I'll have that. Always looking forward. Again, some of this is very practical advice, but sometimes we need that reminder because we're, you know, I can't speak for everyone, but I'm going to speak for myself. I can do that sometimes. I can stop throughout my day and look at the past and go, maybe I should have done something differently. But as soon as I start thinking that, I go, wait, I'm wasting time here, because that's never going to change. I can only change today and tomorrow. So that's when I stop looking in the rearview mirror and start moving forward and help myself change tomorrow. And then soon you may come to a realization of, hey, if that didn't happen to me, then this wouldn't have happened to me, and what's about to happen to me wouldn't have happened to me, because the chain of events that have occurred, all this cause and effect stuff, brought me to where I am today, which, if it's not good today, it'll be good tomorrow, because you're always moving in that direction. The chain of events can have purpose, can have meaning, if you're always moving forward. It usually doesn't have meaning, and we get lost in this sometimes if we start focusing on what we could have done. If we look at what we could have done, it's hard to see the meaning. But if we look at what can evolve from what we did do or what did happen, then we can give it meaning. We can create meaning in our life. It's like in my 20s when I gave up my cats to the Humane Society, I felt really guilty many years later, not knowing if they put them to sleep, not knowing if they got adopted, and realizing, geez, I was so young, I was so stupid, why couldn't I take care of my animals? Why didn't I make that decision instead? And I would spend, I don't know how long, thinking about that moment and feeling guilty and feeling sad and regretting leaving them there and not realizing what I could be doing instead. And if you've heard me talk about guilt and how to deal with guilt, it's to do something that helps make up for it. So for me, helping make up for it would be rescuing a cat, donating to a cat shelter, donating to the Humane Society, putting my time, effort, energy, and even money into causes that help me not feel better about what I did, but help me give it meaning to something I did. Because that's what I want you to think of, is the decisions we've made. Even, like, look at your felony, Joe. The decision that you made for whatever crime you committed, I want you to give that meaning. You know, if I hadn't done that, then I wouldn't have learned this lesson. If I hadn't gotten a felony, then I would have, you know, who knows, kept on this crime spree or gotten into worse trouble or been in jail for the rest of my life because I did something else. You know, you look at this and you give it meaning and you go, I'm so thankful I did that. You can't do that with everything. I don't think to myself, I'm so thankful I brought my cats into the Humane Society that day, but I'm so thankful I learned something from it. I'm so thankful it created a new direction for me so that when it comes to animals, I treat them like my children now. It's something that has changed my life. So I don't like that I did that. At the same time, I would never have changed if I hadn't done that. Or my change would have been a lot slower, or I wouldn't have learned the lesson in the same way. In order to get through this, I want you to give your past mistakes, your past decisions and behaviors meaning, so that when you go forward, you can make that up inside of you. And listen to my episodes on guilt. Go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com, type in the word guilt. I mean, if you're having an issue with anything you've done in your past, then you look for that guilt keyword on my website. Now, the final thing I want to talk about, Joe, is something that a lot of us experience. I've experienced it, probably everyone. I'm going to say that almost 99% of the people listening have experienced this, is that we think we let the perfect person slip through our fingers. I want to tell you something. This is something it took me many relationships to learn. As you grow and as you evolve, you know, mentally, intellectually, philosophically, as you go throughout life, you learn that a lot of people have a lot to give. And what happens is we develop attachments to people that we think are perfect. You know, when I was married, my wife and I liked watching sci-fi together. We liked watching Star Trek together. We liked watching all kinds of things together. We liked, we had the same sense of humor. I would say stupid things and she would laugh. In this relationship, it's not so much all about sci-fi. My girlfriend likes some drama, and my girlfriend doesn't laugh at all my jokes. But this is a good thing, because what happens is, as you find people in life that have different tastes, that have different personalities, it opens you up more too. It expands who you are. If you're with the same person and you are the same way and never expand who you are, unless you're just perfect in every way, you're the catch of the century. Most people want someone who keeps expanding. And let me give you an example of that, because that sounds a little bit presumptuous. When I say most people want someone who continues to expand, I mean, think about this. When you get into an argument, your partner may be staunch in their position and say, no, this is the way it is. I will never move from that position. This is how I feel, and you're wrong about it. So they're staunch. They're not moving. They've closed their mind. They refuse to go any further with that. You might think that this perfect person is wonderful and perfect, yet they won't move on this one issue. This is one of those things where it's nice to have someone that expands. expands their mind, opens their mind, thinks about things in different ways, has a critical thought process, might even be open to being wrong. That's what I mean by someone who wants to expand, who wants to continue figuring out what's best for themselves, what's best for the relationship, and instead of just assuming they have it all down, instead of just assuming I've got life figured out, I don't need anything, I don't need to learn anything else. I think it's great when you can find someone who continues to expand, who continues to question their own knowledge, their own philosophies, and is willing to have conversations instead of stonewalling you and telling you that there's no more room for discussion. I mean, unless you're a kid. Kids have to listen to their parents or their caretakers until they're old enough to go out on their own. But it is nice to even have a mom or a dad that is expansive in that way, in the sense where they are flexible enough to talk about things in a way that doesn't make them right and you wrong. So that's what I mean. I think a lot of us, if not all of us, want someone in our lives. You know, if we're not in a relationship now and you want a partner, or you're in a relationship now, even if you've been with someone for 20 or 30 years or a lot longer, it's nice to know that if you stay the same and you never question who you are or how you behave or what, if your reactions are healthy or if you're supporting your partner's happiness, their path, the things they want to do in their life, if those things never change, that's not always fulfilling. So the reason I say this, Joe, is that, you know, we think that we lost the perfect person, we let them slip through our fingers, yet we end up meeting someone else who's not like that person, and we think, oh, that person doesn't like sci-fi. Oh, that person smokes or drinks or doesn't smoke and drink, and it's incompatible with me, and oh, that person this, that person that. And we start realizing something else about ourselves that we go, you know, I haven't wanted to change. Maybe I do need to change. Or maybe there's some flexibility I can give to see what would happen if I stopped doing this or started doing that or shifted my perspective on this. When you have two people that do that and they're a little bit flexible with each other, what you find is that feeling that you have when you're with someone who's supportive and loving and nurturing and actually cares about you, you find that there's more connection than you thought originally. We look at the people in our past and we think, oh, you know, some of them, they're perfect, or one of them is perfect. I mean, not everyone, but some of us have had that perfect relationship. Why did I let that slip through my fingers? Until we open up a little bit in our current relationship or our future relationship and think, you know, I never went country line dancing. I've never wanted to, but what would happen if I did? And what would happen? Maybe I would meet new people. Maybe I would have a new appreciation for it. Maybe I would I'd be tired at the end of the night and go, whoa, that was a lot of exercise. That was good for me because I opened up my mind a little bit, because I chose to see things a little differently, to be a little flexible. And then suddenly this person looks a lot more fun and so different than the last person that maybe who I was in the last relationship wasn't necessarily who I wanted to be. And maybe the person that I was with, who I thought was perfect, liked me for who I was, even though I didn't want to be that person. Or you might be saying, she loved me the way I was no matter what, no matter who I was. And I will follow up and say, yeah, that's probably true. When I was married, my wife loved me unconditionally no matter what. However, I was still unhealed. And if she stayed with me any longer, she would have become more and more depressed. I mean, that's what was starting, because I wasn't changing. So she may have loved me unconditionally, but I was putting her through a lot of stuff because I wasn't changing. Just like you said, Joe, there were things about yourself that you couldn't figure out, well, why did I let her go? And why did I do these stupid mistakes? And I wonder if you would have changed if she continued to love you the way, just the way you were. Because sometimes we need that motivation. Sometimes we need someone to break up with us. Sometimes we need someone to divorce us for us to realize that something needs to change in us. And as hard as it is to hear, sometimes if we stay with someone where we're not motivated to expand ourselves, we may never change. And then eventually that person may resent us. I mean, that's what happened in my marriage. My wife eventually resented being with me because I never changed. I was the same person. I always said I was changing. I'm always working on it, I said. But I didn't. And if she hadn't left, I wouldn't have grown internally. I wouldn't have grown emotionally and mentally and intellectually because I just took advantage of the person I was with, thinking that she would always be there. So I didn't give myself the incentive. This is sometimes what we need, incentive. And sometimes an incentive is accountability, where someone says, I can't be with you anymore. In your case, Joe, you wanted to improve yourself. You wanted to go through some personal growth. You wanted to establish your foundation. So you did what you had to do to make that happen in your life, which is a very noble quality. And maybe if you'd stayed, what you're going through now and establishing the solid foundation, maybe that never would have happened. So my final thought is just something I said earlier. Don't continue looking in the rearview mirror. Keep looking forward and keep showing up as a better and better you every day. Because who knows what's going to happen? Maybe you'll connect with her again, maybe not. But what I do know is that when we heal and grow through our own stuff, we suddenly become the one others want to be with. And we're no longer picking from a tiny pool of people because now we are more appealing. Not because we're more attractive to the world in general, but because we feel good in ourselves. And when we show up feeling good in our own skin, people like that energy. People like to be around it. So keep moving forward, my friend. Thank you so much again for sharing that. We'll be right back. So my girlfriend plays music at a spiritual center every Sunday morning. As her biggest fan and supporter, I get up with her and I help her pack and then set up at the location. We wake up, load up the car, and then get there early so we have time to run the cables and connect the equipment, you know, get everything set up for the service. Well, without fail, we never have time to eat. So I remember this past Sunday, we're rushing out the door and she mentions that she's hungry. And I'm like, yeah, I'm with you. I'm hungry too. So I said, let me grab some bars. We got in the car, and in moments, our hunger was gone, and we were ready to tackle the day. But these weren't just any bars. These were RX bars, those delicious whole food protein bars I'm sure you've seen by now. They're showing up all over the place. In fact, my girlfriend was at a Kaiser Permanente pharmacy, and they actually have these RX bars in the pharmacy. So if the hospital is putting it in their pharmacy, there's something to be said about that. RX bars are just what you need for that on-the-go snack or anytime you're hungry in between meals. There's no fillers, no additives, no chemicals, and no added sugars. What I do with my RX bar is I take a few bites, wrap it back up, put it in my pocket, and just take a few bites whenever I feel the need to. And it satisfies my hunger and my taste buds. So I want you to check these bars out. Go to rxbar.com/brain. And enter the promo code BRAIN at checkout and you'll get 25% off your first order. That's a great savings and the perfect way to try out the different flavors they have to offer. They have chocolate sea salt, gingerbread, I haven't tried that one yet, pumpkin spice, blueberry, coconut chocolate, my favorite, chocolate chip, mixed berry, maple sea salt, something else I want to try, and a lot more. These are whole food protein bars with simple, real ingredients. The core ingredients are right on the front of the package, like egg whites, dates and nuts, and the other ingredients that make up the texture and taste are also on the back, like 100% real cocoa, coconut, and other all-natural ingredients. And these things taste delicious as is, which is why they don't have to add anything else to it. They don't need to. And just for those of you who are wondering, they do have bars without nuts as well. You can choose from sweet, savory, chocolate, or fruit flavors. RX bars are gluten-free, soy-free, and dairy-free. No artificial colors, no artificial flavors, no preservatives, and no fillers. So I've said enough. Get 25% off your first order when you visit rxbar.com/brain and use the promo code BRAIN to get the discount. Breakfast on the go, snack at the office, throw in your bag for the plane ride, toss in your backpack for the bike ride or hike, or just keep in your pocket like me to snack on when you need it most. And I recommend the chocolate coconut. rxbar.com/brain. Promo code BRAIN for 25% off your first order. You're gonna love it. All right, our next email is from someone I'm gonna call Chris. Chris says, so I'm dating a woman and we aren't together, but just dating. I get a lot of relationship questions, as you can tell. Well, she still talks to her ex occasionally and swears up and down that she doesn't have feelings for him and that if it makes me uncomfortable, that she'll stop talking to him. But I say no because I don't want to control her. But should I feel different? Or should I just trust her since I don't have a reason not to? I don't want to get cheated on, but I feel if she's going to cheat on me, me telling her not to talk to him won't matter. Hope to hear from you. Thank you so much. All right, Chris, great question. And it's something that I hear from a lot of people, not necessarily the same way you just asked, but in the way where someone feels like they need to control someone else's connection or communication with someone that they might consider a threat in some way, in the sense of someone who could be a potential partner. You know, I could say someone of the opposite sex, but it doesn't work for everyone. It could be someone of the same sex. Just someone that if your partner was talking to them, that you feel threatened in some way, that that person might, for lack of a better way to put it, move in on your territory. I get this when I was in my teens. My girlfriend talking to other guys made me uncomfortable, made me insecure. It made me think, oh, gee, if she's talking to other guys, that means that she might go out with them and dump me. You know, we jump to these massive conclusions that may or may not be true, but our mind makes it real. So we think we need to control our partner and say, you can't talk to that person. It makes me uncomfortable. So what happens is we put a collar around our partner's neck, proverbial collar, and we tie a leash to that collar and we put the stake in the yard and they can only go so far from the leash. The leash can reach the friends that aren't a threat, but the leash cannot reach the friends that are a threat. And so I want you to imagine this little imagery that I painted here, because this is what happens when we start putting restrictions on our partner's relationships with other people, is that they feel like they're tied down. They feel like they're locked up. They feel like they've lost some freedom or a lot of freedom because I can't talk to that person anymore. Now, I'm not saying that some people aren't threats, but here's the thing. Even if those people were threats, would it be better for your partner to come to their own conclusion about whether they want to talk to someone? Or is it better for you to say, you can't talk to that person, or I don't want you talking to that person? I mean, put yourself in this position. Let's just say that you have a really good friend that you know you're never going to be romantic with, and your partner comes along and says, I don't want you talking to that friend. That person makes me uncomfortable. And you're like, what? Nothing is ever going to happen between me and this person. You don't have to worry about anything. And they're like, yes, but I just don't like it. It makes me uncomfortable. Do you just say, okay, I'll stop talking to them? Or do you feel like, wow, I feel like someone's trying to control me here and for no good reason? But what if you could get on board with that? What if you could just say, okay, I won't talk to that person anymore. I get it. And then they said, okay, and I also don't want you to work in that department at your job because that department has too many of those people. And they're all a threat to me. Now, what are you feeling? Now the walls are closing in a little bit. And you're like, geez, you know, this is my job. I don't know if I can control that. But they say, no, it makes me uncomfortable. And you're risk losing me if you work with these people. So you might acquiesce a little bit. I don't know. I wouldn't. But let's just say that you did. All right, I'll get a transfer or I'll quit my job because I don't want to lose you. And so you go through some changes there. And now you're in a different department or you have a different job or whatever. But now you go out on a date and the waiter or the waitress comes along and they leave the table. And now your partner says, I don't like the way you're looking at them. Let's ask for another waiter or waitress. You can see where I'm going. I'm making it worse and worse and worse. But this isn't far from what it feels like to have a partner that controls who you connect with and who you communicate with. Because what often happens is the person who feels controlled is more likely to get their emotional and sometimes physical needs met from someone else. I want you to think about this. I mean, this isn't true all the time, but I want you to think about, how do I control my partner? what levels or what methods of control do I have on my partner right now? Because the person who controls can often be betrayed. And if you're the controller because you can't trust your partner, then I want you to consider the relationship that you're in and the decisions that you're making to be with someone you can't trust. There's all kinds of little aspects to this. There's all kinds of little tendrils that go into different areas of life and how this affects your relationship. But I want you to think about that. If you feel like you need to control your partner because you don't trust them or because you don't trust other people with them, which is really extending distrust towards your partner, meaning you'd think your partner wouldn't be able to handle it if somebody else came onto them or something. I'm just talking about in romantic situations. I mean, you may not want your partner to drink or smoke, or there are other things that you may not be able to trust your partner to do or not do, but it still comes down to being with someone that you can't trust would make the right decisions for them and the relationships. And maybe they can't. Maybe they won't make the right decision for the relationship. But it still comes back to you and who you're choosing to be with that you can or cannot trust. Because I tell you what, if you can't trust your partner to talk to anyone in your circle or their circle, then there's something else going on. And trying to control what they do or don't do is only going to make your situation worse. So I know what some people might be thinking right now is, well, what do I do then? This person at work is a threat, or this person at the diner that they go to is a threat, or, you know, we feel all these threats. I think the first thing to do is assess that if the threat is real. Like if they have dated before and that person that your partner is talking to is still interested in your partner, that could be considered a real threat. However, if they dated before and they're both happy in their relationships, your partner's happy with you and his ex or her ex is happy with their partner, then maybe the threat isn't real. I'm not saying it isn't. I'm just saying maybe it's not as threatening as it could be. So the idea is to first assess the threat. Let's look at reality here. Is it real? And if you can't do that, just take yourself out of the situation. If you were your best friend looking in and you could see your best friend's partner and what is going on there, is there inappropriate behavior, inappropriate communication, or are you just making a mountain out of a molehill? Sometimes it's real. Sometimes I'm not saying that it's not real ever. I'm just saying let's face reality, see what's real. Second thing is to check in with your insecurity. Because if you brought insecurities into the relationship and those insecurities are expanding to your partner's behavior and you want to control your partner's behavior because of insecurities that you feel in you, if they didn't start in the relationship, you brought them in, like you have a tendency to be jealous. You have a tendency to not be trusting of other people. If any of these tendencies you brought into the relationship are now being put on your partner and your partner's trying to comply, but they feel more and more controlled by your insecurities, then it's time to work on yourself inside you and try to figure out what you're insecure about and maybe even where those insecurities come from. I've done episodes on insecurities and building your self-worth, building your self-esteem. Just go to my website, theoverwhelmedbrain.com, and use a little search field, look for insecurity. Look for maybe jealousy. That's a good one. An episode that where I talked about insecurities. Maybe self-worth and self-esteem. That'll probably help a lot. Because what happens is you need to address these insecurities and find out if these are what's causing you to want to control your partner. Because I want you to remember, the more you try to control someone, the more they'll feel unsafe with you. And then, like I said, they'll want to get their needs met somewhere else. So it's vital to understand what's happening inside of you. And the third thing I want to say is a little controversial, but it's kind of what I do sometimes, which is prescribe the symptom, which is encourage relationships that you're uncomfortable with. Not necessarily say go see that person, but taking away the resistance you have about their relationship with someone else. Because the resistance to their relationship with someone else is and can be what creates them wanting to get their needs met from someone else. It's a little strange and it doesn't always work. Like if your partner's a little scoundrel, they may be doing something unscrupulous. So that's why we look at the facts and find out if this is real, a real threat or not. But if it's not a real threat, then encouraging the relationship they have and encouraging the communication in the sense where you take out your resistance to it. And you even ask, how is so-and-so doing? And they tell you, and they're maybe nervous telling you because, you know, you used to yell at them or something. But instead of yelling at them, you go, great. I hope they have a wonderful time tomorrow. Or I hope they do this, or I hope they do that. And your partner's like, what? Who are you? You never liked this person. Because what's happening is that if you take out the resistance, your partner will feel more comfortable around you, feel safer to share things with you. And what is likely to happen is that they're going to find that more appealing about you, and they may even want to spend more time with you to the point where the other person doesn't feel like they're taking time away from you. This actually does work. I've done this in my own relationships where my girlfriend will be talking to someone, an ex, or someone I really don't want in her life. But instead of going, I don't want you talking to that person, which automatically puts them in rebellion mode sometimes, and they feel now restricted in the relationship, like they are a dog on a leash and they can't go past a certain point. They feel confined, which makes them want to be with someone more than me, because that's what happens. But when I encourage it, take out my resistance and say, so, how's so-and-so? Which at first will make them suspicious. Or maybe I don't ask about it at all. Or maybe when they say their name, I don't get mad or give them that look. I just let it be like it's anyone else. When you do this for your partner, what it does is it allows them to become self-empowered to make the right decisions for you, for the relationship, for the greater good. Because eventually, if their relationship is causing a problem for your relationship, then your partner's not going to want to ruin that. Assuming your partner is in this relationship and loves it and wants to keep it with you, then your partner's not going to want to ruin that relationship. He or she is going to want to be with you more and want to spend time and energy with you and want to be with someone who supports them and doesn't try to control them. When that resistance to what they do is removed, they feel freer. They feel like they can be themselves. And often that changes the relationship they have with other people. Again, you can't do this with, I hate to say it, scoundrels, people that don't have your best interest in mind, people who are selfish, people who are untrustworthy, people who have the ability to betray you. You know, you look for those facts, you find out if it's your own insecurities causing the issues, and then you take out your own resistance to it, even though it's hard, even though you don't want to, and you notice what happens. You experiment in your relationship, and you actually support what you originally resisted to find out if what you're supporting grows and expands, or it makes them want to be with you and please you, grow the relationship with you more and more. In other words, the more you resist something that they're doing, the more likely they're going to do it or grow to resent you and find other ways to get their needs met because they're not getting them met through you, because that resistance is very unappealing to them. So that's the whole point here. Chris, I hope this helps you understand where I come from with this. Yes, when your partner is talking to someone that you don't like, that you feel is a threat, I'm all about having an open conversation, of course. You know, I just left that out completely, but it is true. Hey, you know what? That person you're talking to, it makes me feel uncomfortable. And then you can have an open conversation about it. And then if your partner goes, oh no, there's nothing between us. There'll never be anything between us. We just talk about this and this, and I find out how their life is going. They find out how my life is going, and then we hang up. And that could be the alleviation that you're looking for. But it is good to have open communication with your partner just to let them know what's going on. Now, if they say, well, that's none of your business. It's tough. If you don't like it, then too bad. If they're like that and they're not willing to have a conversation, again, you have to question who you're with and if you can trust that person, and if do you want to be with someone who doesn't really want to consider how you feel. Hope that's not you, but if it is, just, you know, start to consider these things. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for writing. And thanks for listening to another episode. We'll be right back. I'm going to say some thank yous, my final words, and we'll end the show after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank RX Bar. Check them out. rxbar.com/brain. Use the promo code BRAIN for 25% off your first order. I dig them. I think you will too. And I want to thank those who contribute to the show through the patron program. If you go to patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com, you can be a supporting member of this show and help to spread the message out there. Help to spread the word and try to detoxify the planet. It's a tall order. I'm doing the best I can at that, but your support is amazing. Thank you, existing patron members. And if you'd like to be a patron member too, go to patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. And by supporting the show, you get bonus episodes. I have about like 75 or 6 right now. And a bunch of free workbooks and videos. And of course, you can join the e-coaching program there as well. If you want one-on-one coaching through email, as opposed to the live one-on-one coaching through video or phone. A lot of people are benefiting from that. So check it out, patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. And thank you to those of you supporting the show through the Amazon button. If you go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com and click on the Amazon button, every time you purchase something on Amazon through that link, we get a few pennies on the dollar, and it's very, very helpful. So thank you to you as well. And finally, thank you to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And normally I'd mention the Mean Workbook at loveandabuse.com. That is the healing and assessment guide for difficult relationships. It's really about emotional abuse and manipulation and how to identify it in your life and what you can do about it. I guess I just did mention it, but what I really want to mention and what I really want to talk about to close the show is an article I wrote, when was it? A few months ago. It's called, Are You Being Abused by a Narcissist? And it starts off going, you know, I used to think narcissism was when someone looked in the mirror and stared at themselves thinking that they're the greatest. And that's not far from the truth in many ways, but it's a lot more than that. Narcissists are the ultimate manipulators, and they don't seem to have any empathy, which means they will get what they want regardless of how you feel. They just go after it regardless of how you feel. So if you're in the way, you're going to feel the effects of that, and they just won't seem to care. So being in a relationship with a narcissist can be a huge problem, especially because a lot of compassionate, empathetic, kind, generous people get into relationships with narcissists and are heavily taken advantage of and are often diminished, devalued, and made to feel unworthy. But what the narcissist is really good at doing is making you believe and you think that you're unworthy because they manipulate in a way that causes you to question yourself. They cause you to believe that you're doing something wrong when they're setting you up to fail. You don't see it, though. It's very subtle. It's what I talk about in the Mean Workbook and how you get into this place of doubt in yourself and lower worth, and your self-esteem goes down and you feel like you can't do anything right. And the very person that's putting you in this place to fail is the person you go to for support. And that's how they create the cycle of you not wanting to leave the only person you're getting support from because you're unable to see the abuse that's going on. It's a very subtle, covert abuse. But the reason I mentioned this article is because, A, if you have any inkling of thought that you might know a narcissist or be with a narcissist, this article can be helpful. I have a few bullet items that are many of the typical characteristics. I'm just going to read a few here and comment on them, just so you have an idea of what you may be dealing with if you know someone like this. Narcissists want what they want and will do anything to get what they want, even if their behavior harms you. I already said that, but this is one of the bullet lists, and I think it's important to know, because a lot of people that I hear from that live with narcissists or people with narcissistic tendencies will tell me he just doesn't seem to care. Or when she broke up with me, she went out with the next guy right away, or the next girl right away, or what have you. The people that reach out to me and they're hurt, they're emotionally wounded, because the person they were with did something that seemed heartless. And that's what it looks like. That's exactly probably what it feels like to them. They feel heartless because they do not have empathy for you. And so that puts them in a position of, I can do anything I want and I don't care. Well, I don't care about you because all I'm looking for is to get my own needs met. So it's not about you at all. It is because you're being affected, but it's their attention isn't always about love. It's about getting their own needs met. And when you feel diminished and devalued and unloved by them, you're expecting too much from them. I hate to say it, but a lot of people like this are unable to give the love that you deserve. You are worthy. You are lovable. You are amazing. And yet they can't get a grip on that because all they care about is getting their own needs met. So I don't want you to take it personally, even though it feels personal. And that's just one bullet item, I hate to say. Another one is they invalidate you, they diminish you, they make you feel like you're never enough and not worthy of better treatment. I kind of already said this, but that's the bullet item, so I had to read it. But it's true. I mean, if you feel invalidated, I mean, that's a huge thing. I used to talk about that all the time. Invalidation is when you are with someone who doesn't think you matter, who doesn't think what you say matters, doesn't think what you do matters. They don't validate your love. They don't validate your support. They don't validate your nurturing. They don't validate all the good things that you do. They just invalidate it to make you feel like you're never good enough. That's their MO. That's what they do. I want you to be aware of this so you don't take it personally, even though it feels personal. I'll probably repeat that again. This is how they behave, not who you are. Third bullet item is they'll quote, this is an interesting one, they'll quote what other people say about you, regardless if those people actually said it or not. They do this to put you down and make you feel inferior. What do I mean by that? They'll say, oh, Mary said that you never take care of your kids and that you're always, you know, outside of the room and never watch them. And you'll think, Mary said that about me? What? How could she say that? Even though they're making it up. Or they're twisting Mary's words. That's what they'll do. They'll make things up to put you on the defense and turn you against other people. In fact, the more people they turn you against, the more you're going to rely and feel supported by the person that's actually abusing you. This is that traumatic abuse cycle that can occur in abusive, emotionally abusive relationships. So watch for that. Watch for when they quote other people saying things about you to put you down, to make you feel inferior or bad. Let's see, this one's along the line of quoting someone else. They'll make comments about you, about how you're not really loved or appreciated by other people. They'll say things about your family, about your friends, that make it sound like they don't love you, or they don't love you as much as I love you, or look at what they did. Obviously, they don't love you because of that. And they do a very good job. They're very convincing. So again, be aware of this stuff. And I'll read you one more. They can actually say, I love you, while diminishing you at the same time. They can say, you know, I love you so much. I just don't understand why you're destroying this family. That is a total manipulation. Don't fall for it. When you hear something like that, where they say something positive that makes you feel good, and then they follow it up with a negative emotional arrow in your gut, it does two things for them. It causes you to believe that they actually love you, and causes you to believe that you're doing something wrong, and by doing something wrong, you don't really love them back. There's a mix of other things in there too, but in general, what they're doing is making you feel bad about yourself. And this is the overall concept with emotional abuse, or at least one of them, is where when you feel bad about yourself, they are setting you up so that you feel that way, so that it never looks like they're at fault. This is where the term crazy making comes from, is that you think you're going crazy. You can't figure out what you're doing wrong because they're setting you up to feel bad about yourself, to put yourself down. People in emotionally abusive relationships often become very untrusting of themselves because they are continually put in the position to question their own reality, to question their own beliefs, all because the emotional abuser, the narcissist, set them up to fail, set them up to put themselves down. It's always about, how can I make you feel bad about what you're doing? Look for these signs. You might know it in someone. You might be too close to this person and are experiencing it now. And let me just say this, most people that are doing this to you don't want to change because they're getting their needs met. So just keep that in mind. If you're waiting and waiting and waiting for them to change, what they need is something that most people don't do, and that is create accountability. That is putting them on the spot, making them accountable for their actions, because A, they usually think they're not doing anything wrong because they've done it all their lives, and B, they don't really want to take responsibility for their actions. They don't need to because they always find a scapegoat. And as long as there's a scapegoat that will buckle under the pressure or not understand the type of manipulation going on, then there's absolutely no reason for them to change. No accountability means no change, means that's what you'll get time and time again. The only accountability that I've seen cause a stir is when a partner decides to break up with a narcissist or emotional abuser. When they decide to break up, they go, whoa, I need to change something. But quite often, more times than not, if they really are set in their ways, if the emotional abuser, the narcissist is really set in their ways, they'll change for a few days just to bring you back in and make you comfortable again, and then they'll go right back to the way they were. Because they're not changing. They're just putting on a different mask for you to get comfortable again so that they can be who they always were. So anyway, go to my website, theoverwhelmedbrain.com, and look for Are You Being Abused by a Narcissist article. It's not that long, and it's worth the read if you're interested in that at all. And especially if you can't figure out what's going on in your relationship. Because relationships shouldn't be that hard. I mean, they're not that easy sometimes, but they shouldn't be that hard either. And I want you to have great relationships, whether it's romantic, platonic, doesn't matter. I want you to be able to honor yourself, value yourself, love yourself, be compassionate toward yourself and toward other people as well, which usually extends out into the world when you have it in you. I want it in you first. And how do you do that? You keep your mind open and step into your power. That way you can be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing. We'll be right back.